When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to the Newcastle Natter. My name is Fergus Craig and I'm joined by Paul Doolan.
Hello.
Dave Watson.
We're going to win the league.
That's what it feels like, doesn't it? Feels like it. You know what? So this episode is being recorded after the first game of the season in which we beat Nottingham Forest 2-0. And I've been feeling very positive ever since the result, allowing myself to dream of previously unthinkable things like fifth. And then I remembered, and I know that the circumstances are very different, but I remembered me and Paul going to see a game in a pub the first game of the season 2 years ago against West Ham. And we just signed Callum Wilson and Ryan Fraser and Jeff Hendrick. Jeff Hendrick scored a pretty nice goal in that game. I think we won 2-1. Jeff Hendrick got a nice goal. Did Callum Wilson get the other, or was it someone else? Basically, it was a very good performance. And off the back of that, we all suddenly, off one game, we predicted us to finish like 12th or whatever in the preview pod. And then after that game, we were all like, sixth. One game. And I feel like it's been a little bit like that this weekend. But it was, I know things are different, and it was a good performance, wasn't it, Dave?
It was a great performance. Like, I've rewatched the game, and the difference between the football club under like previous managers and how we're set up now is just really exciting. Like, there's a thing which is like passes per defensive action. It's just a measure of how much you press. And if you compare this weekend's pressing against Forest versus our pressing against like first game of the season last season, we had something like, we allowed like 7 passes before we were on top of them on average, whereas previously it was like 27. It was like, we are not a passive club anymore.
Is that an exaggeration or is that real? It was 27 passes before.
I wrote it down because I was like, this is insane. It was, 25 passes per defensive action against West Ham, first game of season, last season. And this time it was 6. So,
wow.
Yeah, we are on top of players.
The press, the intensity of the pressing was insane. I think it's normally that sort of game you could see a few seasons ago could have had a very similar start, but then because we never pressed teams before, Forest would have quickly come to terms with it and actually started playing decently. And we just didn't. We just had our sort of foot on their throats for the whole game.
Yeah.
Speaking of throats, just a minor technical issue, Dave, beard noise. Beard noise. It's a ever since
really bad.
It's a radical Islam. We've had a serious problem with Dave's microphone rubbing against his giant beard. It's just I'm sorry to open the curtain of what is normally a very professional operation. Just have to tell Dave to please move his mic away from his giant religious beard.
But getting back to the football.
Yeah, sure.
We pushed really high up the pitch. We pressed them all over the place. I think Willock's gone under the radar. He was arguably man of the match.
Really?
Yeah, he was like he did a lot of the dirty work that he was pressing everything, he was tackling, he was making more runs into the box than anybody else, other than Almiron. He was really, really good. Really good under pressure, breaking through lines. He was fantastic.
Bruno got the most praise that I saw for the game as well, perhaps unsurprisingly. He was very good, wasn't he, Paul?
Yeah, his sort of passing and vision is, I don't know, he just seems to have so much more time on the ball than anyone else. Like, it doesn't matter how many players are around him, how close they are to him, he can just, it's like he's playing at half speed compared to everyone else. And it's just, it is ridiculous to watch. I think as well, the encouraging thing about Bruno, we might talk about Almiron a bit more, but the kind of telepathy between Almiron and Bruno was quite promising. I know Almiron got in some good positions and it never quite materialized into anything more, but so many like pass, run, 1-2s between them. I think it's quite promising down that right-hand side.
Well, yeah, because you had Almiron, Willock and Trippier on that right-hand side making little triangles to essentially the plan was get the ball in behind. Or sometimes they use Bruno, but quite a few of them, it was just the three of them. It was just Willock, Almiron and Trippier. Almiron got behind their fullback or their centre-back so often. So did St. Maximum on the other flank. That seems to be the way we want to create a chance, which is to, you know, the cutback. And, you know, Wilson scored off a cutback. We had loads of opportunities. If Almiron would fucking use his right foot, we would have had, like, we genuinely could have been, like, 3 or 4 nil up. Like, we had so many good opportunities.
I did feel for Almiron a bit because there was one really good one that was, he couldn't really do much but play it into the near post, and Wilson had inexplicably gone back post. You just think, I hope he gets more game time for a bit more understanding. Hopefully his pre-season bought him that, but then I don't want to judge him off that one game, but I think 4 or 5 games and we might. So speaking of judging on number of games, how far removed does it feel now since the Steve McLaren, like, judge me after 10 games of that shit just comes to mind?
Did you see the ball across that Wilson left and it came to Almiron and all he had to do is, like, stretch out his foot, his right foot, and it would have been an empty net goal. Essentially, just a tap in at the back post. But instead, he controlled it and he turned and turned and turned, always on his left foot, and just the opportunity died. It's like, just fucking use your right foot.
He's got that thing Joel Linton's got as well, I think, of just as soon as he gets in the box, it just thinks too much. Do you see that? There's a really good Joel Linton chance where he sort of ran from deep, beat about 4 players.
Yeah.
Did all the hard work, got himself in on goal, and then just scuffed it wide. Although it's interesting, you know, is it who scored? The ones who do like the player ratings for the league. The highest rated midfielder in the league this weekend was Joel Linton.
Yeah.
He did put in a really good performance. They're very different players, but Bruno and Joel Linton this weekend made me think of Tiote and Kabai, just because that's the last time I remember us having two players in central midfield who, you know, I was proud that they played for Newcastle. They were like, they seemed like they were, in terms of the league, you know, elite players. And, you know, not ready to call Joe Linton elite yet.
Well, but last season,
yeah,
destructive midfielder, isn't he?
He's been very, very good.
It's going to take so much. It's going to take a lot of getting used to. I don't know if I'll feel safe with Joe Linton as a centre mid because of how quick the transformation was. It sort of feels like magic may have been involved. And we all know magic can be undone.
Yeah.
It's true. It's true. If Joe Linton suddenly starts playing badly again, we know that a princess has been released from a castle.
You have to say, though, like, Forest were terrible.
Yeah.
Forest were really bad. And I don't know how much of that was how bad they are or how much of it is they're brand new. Because I think they've made, like, 13 signings, something like that.
Apparently last season they had five or six of their first team were loanees. So,
okay.
They kind of didn't have much choice in the matter that they had to sign quite a few players.
Yeah, it's hard to know how much of it was us making them look bad.
Go on, Paul.
It's hard to know how much of it was us making them look bad because, like I said before, I think previous seasons they would have looked better because we would have let them play however they wanted to, and that just wasn't an option on Saturday.
But you'd have to say, for all our dominance and for all the good things that players like Almiron and Saint-Maximin did, Wilson aside, we are, would you say, lacking some clinical ness? Clinicacy? What's the word? What's the noun for clinical?
Clinicalness. Clinicity.
Clinicity.
That's not a word.
It's my new phrase, felicity. But
I think those chances that fell to Almiron and Joe Linton, you really only think there's, you'd want them to fall to Wilson or Bruno. You wouldn't really trust anyone else on that pitch to necessarily convert them.
Or Shaw.
Yeah.
God.
Okay. That goal, an exact repeat of another goal he scored a couple of years ago, right, Dave?
Yeah. It's exactly the same position, exactly the same part of the goal it went into, exactly the same like feel of the game where we were battering down the door, but we weren't getting through. And then up strides Fabian Schär to slam one home. It was at a point where we thought, is this ever going to come? It just opened the, like, it gave the fans a bit more hope, and it gave the players on the pitch, they just knew now that, yeah, we've got this.
You can't rely on that every week, though, can you? One of the goal from a central defender. But Wilson was able to get a goal as well. And I think you can make the case that his goal was better. I mean, I think most Premier League footballers, Shaw more than many, have that kind of goal in them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just
hard and straight. Yeah,
hard and straight. If you hit it right, then great. But
so I've got a little bit of, you know, nerdiness. So the chance that that Wilson had, it was 0.09 expected goal value. So 9%. But because of the quality of the shot that he took, it had a 0.9 XG. So it's pretty much gone from a, you're not going to score from here, to this shot is absolutely going in the back of the net.
Well, I for one found that statement easy to understand and have no further questions.
Hang on. At what stage? I mean, once he's hit that shot, isn't it a 1 XG? At what stage are we?
Well, no, because
the new piece of data. So once it's left his foot.
Yeah. So post shot XG measures.
So post shot XG, so it's between the foot and the
back of the net. Well, yeah, because if you think about it, if
the goalkeeper a 1 in 10 chance of saving that shot, that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Right.
Whereas, like, if he'd not had taken such a good shot, the keeper would have had a 5 in 10 or a 6 in 10 chance of shot saving it. So he was basically, the shot he took was so good, the keeper had no chance.
I think, I haven't seen a satisfactory replay of it yet. But I've seen a lot of replays, and I think, I don't know, he might be getting flattered. It might just be a bit of a fluky finish, or it might be one of the all-time great strikers' finishes.
I think you meant it. I think what's more impressive is we have a 2-0 opening weekend win with two amazing goals, and Dave finds a way to make it as dry and uninteresting as possible with a deep dive into XG statistics.
But I have to say, like, that was Eddie Howe's, like, I think 30th league game. You can see a clear progression from where we were to where we are.
Disagree.
I don't think that performance against Forest was chiefly down to how poor Forest were. It gives me much more confidence going into the Brighton game that we'll get something from that. Because of that, that performance is coaching and effort and a plan and good recruitment, everything.
I think fitness as well. You look at the first game of last season when we took the lead against West Ham and then just wilted because our pre-season had been pretty non-existent. Oh. We looked like a really fit team.
Basically had taken the squad to Thorpe Park pre-season. I'll tell you what, there's lots more to talk about. There's some injury news on John Joe Shelvey. There's a lot of correspondence on Twitter, I think, that I haven't read yet. So let's see how much of it is just plain abuse. And there's the upcoming game against Brighton, who also had a good result this weekend.
Before we leave the Forest game, there's one
Dave. You
one
can.
Thing I just want
fine. To... I mean, fine. You go on. Really wrapping up. You could have brought it up in the second half, but go on, fine.
No, I wanted to bring it up now. The corner routine. Did you see Forest's corner routine?
Yes.
What was the XG?
Where they had 0 because they had nobody in the box.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. I've often thought
fucking
that...
Fucking mental.
No, I thought that was a good idea. It didn't.
I think a better ball, and that looks like a really good routine. It's like the one that England copied from Lincoln City, where it's just a line of players. Like, if that goes badly, you think, what the fuck is they doing?
For anyone listening who didn't see the corner routine, what it was yes, as corner taker was lining up, there were no Forest players in the box, and just as he kicked it, I don't know, 6 or 7 Forest players all ran into the box at the same time. To me, that makes complete sense. It either comes off or it doesn't, but like, it makes complete sense because you can't mark anyone, you don't know where they're coming from. If one of them connects, then you say that was brilliant. It makes total sense to me.
It also suggests that whoever's doing their set pieces in training is just getting ideas from going around pubs and listening to people's ideas. I think next they're just going to try hitting the biggest player and see if that works.
I don't understand what's wrong with it, Dave. Explain to me what's wrong with that. Is it what? It's completely logical, right? Isn't it? It makes complete sense.
No. Basically,
you haven't seen it before. Don't be afraid of the new, Dave. Don't be afraid of the new.
I'm not afraid of the new.
This is tapas all over again. Come on, Dave.
We have Chinese or Indian every week. There's a new Thai open in the area. Can you please try it?
Not having that muck. My issue with it is that the none of the defenders were engaged with any of the attackers. So while the attackers, yes, they had a free run into the box, all the defenders had taken up the correct position so that wherever the ball came, they were in place. They didn't have to watch for runners like jostling for position, getting body checked. There was no physicality in the box. They were just going to run in. The most likely outcome of that is either the goalkeeper calmly claiming the ball, which is what Pope did, or one of the onrushing attackers barreling into a defender, giving away a free kick.
Okay, well, we'll see. But I predict that they'll get a goal from it before Christmas.
I don't think they'll ever try that again.
Yeah, you're making it out like it's a mad thing. It makes total
sense. It is mental. It's not. I don't think it's mental. It just looks bad when it doesn't come off. The ball made it look a lot worse than it was, because it was just straight at Nick Pope, who didn't have a save to make on his debut as well, which is quite nice.
I know.
All right. Well, we'll have a break, and there's much more to talk about. So make sure you do come back for the second half. I know I will. Welcome back to the Newcastle Natter. Now, we were talking a fair bit about how improved options in the centre of midfield are compared with what they were a year ago, for example. The only new player is Bruno that I can think of in that position, but Joe Linton is pretty much a new player. I saw on Twitter today, I know I obsess about Twitter quite a lot, but I saw some Newcastle fans getting very annoyed at the Daily Mail journalist Craig Hope, because he had in his player ratings given Bruno a 7 instead of an 8.
That's incendiary.
They were like, I literally saw someone tweet that it was clickbait. Like, it's totally reasonable to say, oh, come on, that was an 8. That's fine. Yeah. The conversation is over. It's not like he's giving him a 4. He's giving it one mark lower than what you think. It's not. And they were like, saying he's being antagonistic.
Well, I think this is the mindset of modern football fans, a lot of it, especially online ones, that if someone doesn't agree with them, it's an act of aggression. It's not that different opinions are allowed.
Oh, and while I'm briefly on the subject of Twitter, this is another thing that certainly I've seen fans of all clubs do it. It's a new, and I've got drawn into it myself, but it's a new thing of people taking a screenshot of a moment in the game and pointing out the pass that should have been played. They'll take a freeze frame of a moment when, like, say, for example, they did it. I saw with Almiron and Saint-Maximin, where they could have squared it, and supposedly Wilson was completely free and he'd have a tap in.
Oh, for fuck's sake!
Screenshot, and I've seen it a lot with other clubs and stuff. And it's like, yes, in that like freeze frame that you've chosen,
yeah,
it does look really bad, but you're forgetting what football is.
That you've had 20 minutes to have a think about.
Yeah, and find that exact fucking frame. Like, yeah, if it was easy as that, then, yeah, like, we could all play football. Like,
yeah. Anyway. I mean, I was having a go at Almiron for not using his right foot, and I gave an example. But in the moment, he's a professional footballer. Like, he's made a decision based on that. And like, fucking don't go on to Twitter, because basically on Twitter they're doing it so that they appear to know what they're talking about, right? Sure.
So, and what I meant to do was, because I was talking
not like about a podcast.
No,
that's
we don't know what the fuck we're talking about. What I meant to do is, because we were talking about the midfield, is point out that we're just hearing. That Jonjo Shelvey is out for 12 weeks, which effectively means he's out until the World Cup. So looks like he's not on the plane. which means he's effectively, we can be pretty sure that he's going to miss the first 16 games of the season. Does that mean that we need another player in midfield? Does that mean we need to sign someone?
I don't think Shelby being injured will make us like any less or more interested in signing a player in the centre of the park. I think our focus is going to be right wing or centre forward. I don't think we're suddenly, because we've still got, you know, 4-5 centre midfielders who...
You're including Elliot Anderson in that?
No, in that case, 6.
Who's the 5?
Joelinton, two long staffs. Well, yeah. And then Willock and Elliot Anderson. I don't think we're going to go off and sign a centre midfielder unless, I don't know, Frankie de Jong becomes available and is interested in joining the project. We're not going to go off and sign. No, the focus is going to be...
Well, we have. We are still, as far as we know, potentially trying to get James Maddison, which means it's not a part of the park that we weren't already considering buying a player for.
Yeah, but I think...
I mean, when you're talking about Matty Longstaff, I mean... Yes, he has put in a couple of good performances in the Premier League, but he played last season at Mansfield, didn't he?
I feel like Elliot Anderson's ahead of him at the moment, though. I think he'll stay. Yeah. I saw some people saying like we need to sign another midfielder because now Bruno gets injured, we've got no one to play in that deep lying role. But like, the whole point of a squad is sort of, you can't have 3 players for every position. You just have to hope you don't get 2 injuries in one position at the same time. And if you do, just rejig the setup. Like, I'm sure Longstaff, Joelinton and Bruno...
And Willock.
Could work.
Well, Phil Huntsman says, would it be best for Anderson's long-term development to loan him to a promotion-challenging championship club? Without injuries, do you think it's likely he'll make more than a handful of sub-appearances? Even if there are injuries, we could just recall him. But obviously, you can't recall him after the transfer window, can you? After the transfer window closes.
It's a weird one. Recalling players from loans seems like something that only really happens on Football Manager.
Yes, and often you realise on Football Manager that you can't do it when you think you can.
So I would say it's tricky with Elliot Anderson because I don't really think of him as a central midfielder. He's an attacking midfielder who has played there. Whereas like Willock, Joelinton, Longstaffs and Bruno, they're all central midfielders now. So I think we've got 5, and 5 is enough. I don't think we need to go off and sign another centre midfielder, because if the reason I said that we've got Matty Longstaff is because we'll need a centre midfielder on the bench. Like he would never be the one that I would start, but we got one at the club, so we don't need to go off and sign a 6th Shelby's going to be back.
Andy Sheldon says, presuming the Maddison deal goes no further, who do you see us getting as that creative midfielder that we're missing? You're suggesting that creative midfielder isn't the number one priority. I mean, I'm personally worried that like Callum Wilson is our only clinical finisher, and we could do with a wide player who can also score.
Yeah, I think the reason we were looking at Ekitike and wanted him so much is he ticks both those boxes. Like he's a wide forward who can play in the middle as well. That same feels like what we're
Moussa
still
Diaby.
Yeah.
Yeah, same as Moussa Diaby. There's a stack of links that were... I mean, it was like Alexander Isaac. There's a bunch of them, but they're all those, like, not quite the same level, but Mo Salah, Sadio Mane... That kind of attacking forward.
That position, not that level of player.
I thought you were suggesting that we should be signing Mo Salah.
No. Just not that level, but that kind of player. That kind of, like Paul's saying, like that wide goal-scoring attacking winger.
Our formation is kind of similar. Are we trying to play a sort of more conservative, playing within our own abilities version of what Liverpool play?
More like Man City.
Is that what we're going for? Do Man City play sort of a 4-3-3?
ostensibly, but then their wing backs are a lot better than ours. So those wing backs are almost playing as midfielders. And then you've got players like Foden, Grealish, and whomever on the right side feeding in. Or that's what they have been doing. I'd anticipate now that they've signed Erling Haaland, they will change the way they're playing.
This is the same with Liverpool.
It changes, isn't it? Because that's the formation now, isn't it? 4-3-3.
Well, I think
that used to be mad. That used to be what you used to do on Football Manager in the 90s or whatever football game you were playing on the computer. You go, I'm going to play 4-3-3. That used to be like the mad attacking formation.
Well, I think what's interesting about how the game's changed is since you said last season there's no strikers, every team is buying a number nine and just completely rejigging the way they play. I think
that's why there's no strikers, supply and demand.
I think going back to the earlier question about whether Anderson should go out on loan, I think with Shelby out and with the five subs rule, he'll get game time. And he possibly got lucky with his loan last time and the club suited him right. It's that thing of like, there's always examples where it works, but then you've got players like Foden who are just nurtured within the club by a manager who knows what they want out of them. And
certainly,
I think he'll get enough game time to stick around.
I think you're right. Certainly with the five subs, with any luck, we'll get... Do we know who we're playing in the Carling Cup yet?
Not yet, I don't think.
Not yet.
Really early, isn't it? Although, with any luck, we're not in Europe, but with any luck, there'll be a Carling Cup run. Here's something that occurred to me, because I haven't really been thinking about it until this week. This is a weird season, because it's going to be broken up by the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Who in our squad is going to play in the World Cup?
Pope, Bruno. Trippier.
Sorry, who was the first one you said?
Pope, Trippier.
Bruno, maybe Joe Linton.
I would say there's an argument for Dan Byrne over Harry Maguire. I don't think that'll happen.
Yeah.
Any of the England ones, except maybe Trippier. You know, if Wilson or Dan Byrne or Nick Pope get into the squad, you wouldn't be expecting them to play much.
Well, I don't know about Pope. I mean,
okay,
who's ahead
Pope,
of him?
But that's the goalkeeper. You don't worry about particularly about them burning themselves out. What I'm saying
my issue is I don't know.
What I'm saying is we might have the advantage of most of our squad getting a month-long break.
Yeah.
We're not in Europe. That could be bad for us. I don't know. Is Paraguay in the World Cup?
This is what I was going to ask. I don't know if Sweden are in the World Cup or Switzerland or Paraguay or what other random country.
Who's our Swedish player?
Kraft.
Kraft. Okay. Right. So,
of course, Botman, would he go? Are they in the World Cup?
He's not in the senior team yet.
So. I asked a question. It's shown that we've got absolutely no idea. I guess we'll deal with that.
But I think most Premier League teams are going to have players, like a handful of players at the World Cup at least.
Tyne Thames said there's lots of talk that Leicester have peaked, just like other clubs who tried to permanently join the Big Six. Do you think that our owners will have the patience required to break the glass ceiling where others have failed?
Because their long-term aims aren't a return on their investment. It's to reflect in the success or glory of a Premier League, you know, a big Premier League club. So PIF have got money literally to burn. So they're not going to get they're not going to think that I'm just throwing good money after bad here. That they are going to want to see progress. They're going to want us to be in the Champions League. They're going to want us to be at some point pushing for the title. And they will keep giving us money to do that.
I think it's going to be pretty tricky with FFP.
It's all going to come down to the commercial deals we sign, because that's how you essentially illegally dope a football club now if you're sports washing.
But then the owners can also give money directly to the club. I think it's there's a limit on it, but they can't just go, oh, here's like 30 million quid, here's 50 million quid or whatever. It's what we can do with that.
For the next, we can spend 200 million a season for the next 3 years, I think. But that includes...
But I just meant, like, say, for example, that we wanted to, like, the commercial income was X and we just needed an extra 50 million or whatever on top of it to get a deal done or to, you know, invest in the stadium or something. Our owners can just afford to just throw that money because money is literally no object to them. So to answer the question,
I think I think the big problem that we're coming up with up against at the moment is that compared with other clubs who are competing for the top six, we have a pretty low wage structure. So it's difficult. I would imagine James Maddison would be asking to be the highest paid player in our squad, for example. I'm amazed that we got Bruno.
Like, well, I think this is like, why
when you look at Man United this weekend, and they've still got Fred and McTominay.
Yeah,
I hadn't heard of Bruno, or maybe I had heard of him, but I didn't know much about him. I think that that's like reasonable for me not to know much about him. You would have thought Man United, someone at Man United might have worked out that there's this guy playing over in France who is a lot better than anyone in your midfield.
Well, I think Bruno
for 35 million.
Bruno and Botman are sort of, they're indicative of the level of where we're at in the project at the minute. We're looking for players who could go on to that next level and whose wages aren't going to be like significantly higher than everyone else at the club. I think that's sort of, I think that's just going to go up every season, but you can't do it all in one go. I'm liking the way we seem to be growing quite sensibly, because the journey of getting better is going to be the fun bit. I think once you get to like where Man City are now, it'll be a bit more boring than the just.
I don't know if we'll ever get up to that, but we'll see. And the next big thing, well, it's not the next big thing, but I think it will come up with someone like Bruno would be on his next contract in a couple of years' time or whatever. If he continues playing like he's playing, he's going to be like, well, I'm a £200,000 a week player. Am I going to get that contract with Newcastle, or am I going to go get it with PSG or whoever?
I think as well, the thing we've not come up against yet as fans is like, are we going to be like Leicester? It feels like financially, at this point on our journey, someone comes in with 100 million for Bruno, you have to accept it and reinvest it, like Villa did with Grealish, or like Leicester have done with a few players. I wonder, I don't know if we're a club that can turn that kind of offer down without matching the wages top players would get at those other clubs.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I would love for us to get one or two more players in at the level of Bruno.
Oh yeah.
By the end of this window, because actually this might be the most fun season.
Yeah. Because it feels like Chelsea could easily drop away. Man U aren't getting anywhere near the top six, I don't think.
And because we're on the up, and there won't be that, like, whatever it is, Bruno's not, whoever we've got in our squad, no one's going to be itching to leave this season.
No.
No.
So we're not going to be coming up against any of that.
But I think as well, if we can get European football of some kind at the end of this season, you can just grow commercially quicker as well. It just speeds the whole process up.
And you can immediately
get appeal to better players as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also those better players that you appeal to won't be demanding as high a wage as they would be for a club that wasn't in the European competition. Do you know what I mean? For example, Ekitike would have been more interested in signing for us if we were also playing in the Europa competition instead of just a mid-table club.
John M on Twitter that says, does Saturday's result slash performance change any predictions you had for the new season or change any perspectives you had on need for new signings? I think in terms of, I think basically from the tone of this conversation, the answer is very much so.
I still think we'll finish about ninth.
I said seventh, so I don't think it's changed me too much.
Yeah. Where did you say, Fergus?
I can't remember, maybe seventh or eighth. And on WhatsApp last night, I was talking about fifth, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's because you forgot about Chelsea.
That is true, I did forget about Chelsea. But I agree. I think both of you maybe said it last week, but again, certainly based on this weekend as well, I think us finishing against above Man United is a good shout. That would be enjoyable.
Yeah,
there's quite a
Sorry, Dave.
I was just going to say quite a few of the mid-table sites, like the traditional ones, like Aston Villa, Everton, Leicester, Southampton. They've all not only started badly, but they look bad.
I think there's a lot of squads in a not great state, right?
Yeah.
Leicester are on the way down. Villa,
Everton.
Villa could go either way. I'm not so sure about
that.
Everton, you'd have to say that they're potential relegation candidates.
There's been a lot of people tipping Palace to do really well, but you just think they've lost Conor Gallagher. I don't think they've realised how big a player he was for them.
They could do. I'm not sure about Wolves this season. I think Southampton are in for a relegation battle.
Yeah.
But this is just astonishing hubris. It's just like here we are, like sitting on our like thrones, spending all our money that we think we've, you know. So, anything else I want to go on to? There was quite a good question from, who was it? Alice Ant says, if you had a role at the club, what role would it be? Just throwing that at you.
I'd like to be a director of football because I feel like you just go and watch a lot of games and have nice meals with other execs.
Yeah. I would like to say, like, you know, a recruitment analyst or something like that. But in all reality, I'd probably get more out of like a kit man. I'd like to be the kit man.
You'd be a good kit man, I think. Do you think it would be like the Arsenal All or Nothing documentary? What would your team talk be if you were the kit man before a game?
I could
invoke the memory of, like, you know, Keegan and Robson and that and I think, yeah, I'd just lean on more impressive people. I wouldn't say like do it for the fans.
I think you could, in theory, be a good kit man, but also there'd be like moments where Callum Wilson is like, why is the bloke who hands me my pants talking to me about XG for my show?
I think, Fergus, you'd be a good Bez for the club.
What I'd like, I would like the role, like whatever the role that is, like, you know, people like all the ex-Man U players seem to have a role at Man U, like Brian Robson or whatever, where they're like just like some kind of ambassador. Yeah. I would just like to basically be on a lot of business class flights.
Yeah.
And just go and just traveling around. I don't have the ability to be a scout, but I'd like to just be traveling around the world watching games. I don't really want to be talking to other directors and stuff. I would like to be a scout, but like not a very good one.
I like that in our fantasy jobs, we've gone for things where we're still too introverted to talk to too many people. And Dave doesn't want to do a statistical job he'd love to because it's too flash. Instead wants to be kit man.
All right, number nine. I'd like to be number nine. I'd like to be number nine. Mickey G says, which players... It's a good question. Which players would you pick if we played a five-a-side game, current squad only? The current squad, your five-a-side team, Dave Watson.
Pope, Botman, Bruno, St. Maximin, Wilson. I've got one more, haven't I?
Pope, Botman, Bruno, St. Maximin. No, that's it.
That's it, five. Yeah.
And I think that would be mine as well.
Yeah, maybe Trippier instead of Botman, but I don't know.
Don't know. Yeah.
Oh, hang on. Is the five-a-side the one where you're not allowed to hit it over head height? Because if it is, then there's no need for Botman. I'll go Trippier.
Okay.
Wow.
Always thinking.
There are a few more tweets, but we'll leave it there in terms of the correspondence. Let's talk about the Brighton game. Do tweet again, by the way. We can't fit in everyone every week. We've got so many listeners. the Brighton game is away. It's another 3 o'clock Saturday kickoff. So another game that's going to be stressful trying to actually watch for those of us who are not fortunate enough to be there. Brighton have just had a very good result. They've just won at Old Trafford for the first time in their history.
Mm.
That is not the kind of astonishing result that it once was. But we don't have a great record against Brighton recently, do we, Paul?
No, but I think, like you say, winning away at Old Trafford is kind of like winning away at Molineux. It's not that big a deal. I think it'll be interesting to see where we're at and where Brighton are at. They pasted us the other year, didn't they? That Tarek Lamptey game, but that was another early season game where we just looked completely unfit and no idea how to set up against any kind of pressing game. I think it'll be very different to every Newcastle-Brighton game that's happened before, but I think it will be a difficult game.
I think it'll be a good test in terms of the quality of our squad. I mean, they're probably further along in their development in terms of how long they've been coached well.
They're going to be defensively a lot better than Forest were, I would say.
Right. Yeah.
But we're both... At the moment, we're two quite well organized sides. So I don't know a lot about their side, but in my head, they've got Welbeck and Lallana and Gross, and then probably a couple of other players that I don't know anything about, but like in a year's time, will be sold for 70 million to Chelsea or something.
They've signed this new striker who's quite short, I think, but he's meant to be very good. I think he's Paraguayan. So him and Miggy will know each other. I think there's a lot of high hopes about him. But then Brighton seem to always struggle with strikers, sign a striker who's going to be the answer, and then they get one goal in 15 games.
Mm. Dave?
I think it's a really good test for us. I think Paul's right that, I mean, we haven't got a great record against them. We beat them the last time we played 2-1. But the Brighton that is now is they are a decent footballing side. On paper, I think we have man for man better than them in like 6 out of the 11 positions. I think we have like Wilson's a better striker than Welbeck. Bruno Guimaraes is better than whoever they fucking want to put him up against. Joel Linton is better than everybody in that role that he plays. So I think if we can dominate the midfield, I think we can dominate possession. And if we can dominate possession, we will create the kind of chances we did against Forest, although with less regularity. I think we just need for those chances to be falling to Wilson and not Almiron or Saint-Maximin.
A lot hanging on Wilson, isn't there? A very brutal player. We do need to sign someone else. Dave, do you have a score prediction?
1-1.
Paul?
1-0 us.
Ooh.
Mm.
I think 1-1's a good show. I'm going to say we're going to lose 2-1. I think we're going to a little bit of a wake-up call, maybe.
No, you go. Yeah, that's fine.
It's nice just going into games.
Go on, Paul.
It's nice going into games where we're not thinking, like, if they have an off day, we can get something here. You feel like we can sort of we control our own destiny now as a team. We're not just reacting to what the other team's going to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we're going to win the league.
We're going to win the league.
Yeah, we're going to win the league.
It's been a, you know, it's been a very positive pod. Let's see if we can maintain this positivity. I mean, I secretly hope that with this, that we have a few bad periods in the season, because I always think it makes for better podcasts.
Well, we've got Man City and Liverpool coming up soon, so I don't think you'll have long to wait.
Strap in, yeah.
But it was, you know, it's nice to start with some, with we're maintaining. Yeah, we had an amazing end to last season, and that has not waned yet. So it's enjoyable. I wonder, here's a question before we finish the podcast. Let's assume we record the next podcast 7 days from now. We're recording this as we speak on a Monday night. 7 days from now, Dave, do you think we will have signed a first team player?
No.
Paul?
When's the window shut? Is it 31st of August?
1st of September.
Yes.
I'm going to say no.
Yeah. I hope we have, but yeah, it could be quite down to the wire. But I think surely we'll sign a couple before that window closes, won't we?
Oh, yeah, I think... Before the window shuts, I think we'll get two in. One on loan, one permanent.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, let's leave it there. Thank you very much, Paul Doolan.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave Watson.
Cheers, Fergus.
And thank you to you, the loyal Newcastle Natter listener. Goodbye.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.